Well, it always goes to what Jonathan always says, competing with their rent.
You never compete with a person's rent or their landlord. If you must sell something to a group of people, better it be an expensive product, and better those people have money. The more money they have, the better. The passion is important, but a great marketer taught me this trick. Without the ability to pay, it does not matter how passionate they are about their subject.
That leads us to the next marketing mistake, which is simply selling your products for too little profit. There, some people have a mental barrier, I think, to charging a good price or good value to a product. And in direct response marketing, we do a thing called price testing. And it's absolutely amazing how that maybe a product that somebody wouldn't buy for $50 or for $100, they'll buy for $500. Or it's interesting because I know of seminars and people, and you'd have extremely difficult time selling the seminar to them for $100 or $500, but if you price the seminar at $2,000 or $3,000, you get all kinds of people coming to it. So sometimes because of a higher price, first of all, people assume that it must be better and it has more value. There's all kinds of things psychologically that go on. But the point is, don't be afraid to charge a lot of money or at least a fair price for what you sell.
Well, I think a lot of people think they're not worth it. I mean, one of the things they go out and say, basically, I'm not worth it, I can't charge more. And the other mistake, there was a guy online who was selling advertising at his site, and he was getting a ton of traffic, a ton of people visiting this site. And what he ended up doing was trying to charge $500, and he wasn't getting any bites. When he raised the price to $5,000, people were bending over backwards, businesses, to invest in it because it was worth it. The higher price said, this is worth it. When he was going lower, they were looking at it like it was some dime store deal.
Gary Halbert made a comment once, which I listened to very carefully. He said that in almost every case where a business is marketing a product or service, in almost every case, they were charging too little. They weren't charging enough, and they could raise their price. So what I did is I'll tell you my story. I had a $29.95 book, great book, and someone said, I think it was you, Marlon, that I should be charging more money. So I raised the price from $29 to $49, and sales did not change one iota. I then added a videotape, and I raised the price to $97, and the sales actually increased. My assistant at the time said, I wonder what would happen if you doubled the price again. So I raised the price to $197. And I have now sold over 1,000 of those particular packages, which, if you do the math, is a couple hundred thousand dollars. Certainly not $1 million. But if I had kept the price at $29.95, I would have made $29,000. Now, there's a big difference between $29,000 and $200,000. And the difference is my guts and my kind of chutzpah to actually raise the price. Now, of course, I added more value to the product, you know, with bonuses, with little things, but the essential sales letter that I use today is the exact same letter that I used to sell the product for about one-tenth. The next big thing for me is, how much higher can I raise the price? Can I go to 300? Can I go to 500? Can I go to? It's going to depend, of course, on the market. But it's amazing to see what happens.
I think some people are afraid to charge a higher price because they really empathize with people that don't have much money, and those are the people that they want to help. And I feel, hey, you should help those people. There's nothing wrong with helping people that are broke or don't have money. There's nothing bad about it. There's nothing wrong with it. Everybody in their life has been broke at some time.
Well, then put that person on your complimentary
list. That's the whole point.
And send them the product for free. Certainly don't try to develop that person as a customer.
Yeah, just don't make those people your target market. Give the product to them or do whatever, but that's not your target market because you're in business to make money, not for charity. If you want to do charity, great. do charity, just don't make it your target market.
But when you're creating, especially if you're talking about creating a book, I think the biggest mistake people make is to go out and look at the bookstore. Mm-hmm. And they see books at $19 and $15.95. I've seen people create products that cost them literally $10, and they say, well, I've got to sell it for $12.95 or $15.95 because Barnes & Noble sells books for that price.
Or that's what my competitors do.
Yeah. Marketing insanity. You know, it's interesting, Doug, because I know people that sell the same book that you could sell at the bookstore for $15 or $20, and I know people that sell them for $500 or $1,000 for one book, and they sell a lot of them.
Well, look at it this way. If you, when you empathize with people and you think, God, I don't want to charge too much money because I want to get it into more people's hands if you really believe in your message, believe it or not, that when people buy a product, unless you charge a lot of money for it, they don't take it seriously.
There are things that you can't give away, but if you'll charge a lot of money for it, you can get all kinds of people to it. I found this out a long time ago. Sometimes if you have a seminar and you try to do it for free, you can't get anyone to attend because they assume if it's free, it isn't any good. So what you say is absolutely on.
Without a doubt.
Another version of that marketing mistake would be failing to test prices. And we've already really talked about it, but neither do you assume that the high price is going to be the most profitable. What you do is you establish different prices and you test them. And Jonathan, you have an interesting thing where someone asks you the question, but Jonathan, if I test different prices, what am I going to do when a customer contacts me and says, well, I paid $500 for this, and John Blow, my friend, only paid $200 for this, and you have an interesting answer for that.
Well, actually, when they've already bought, I just refund their money, and I say, you got it at the lower price. But typically, when someone calls to complain, it's because they've received both marketing pieces, you know, the one for $100 and the one for $200. And so they call, and they say, well, how do you explain this? Now, let me explain something to you. When people call you, it's not to bitch and complain. When people call you, it's not to catch you doing something wrong. It's because they want the product really badly, and they want it at the lower price. So what I do is I turn that potential confrontation into a positive and into a sale. What I say to them is, well, you know what? You busted me. I was just doing a price test, but you busted me, and I'm going to make a concession, and I'm going to give you the product at the low price. Then you become, you get a new customer, you make a sale, you get some money, and the customer is thrilled. They feel like they've gotten the ultimate bargain. Very rarely will people call you up and say, I'm really not interested, I just believe that it's not right that you're testing your prices. Well, forget them. I mean, if they say it's not right that you're testing your prices, that's their own opinion, but don't not test just because you're afraid of that. Test it. If you get caught, give it to them at the lower price.
Well, think about if you're not testing price, you're assuming that you're going to come out with the right price. And that if you're not, that price, if it changes, means you're wrong. Yes, you were wrong. You have to adapt it and listen to what price works.
It's like a headline. Sometimes changing the price can have a significant impact.
We know Walmart has built its whole business on, they put those products out there, and each day they test the prices. They see how many people buy to find the right price.
That's right. Yeah, Walmart is a great example because all stores are connected to the central Walmart in, I think it's Fayetteville, Arkansas. And so the second that something is sold at a certain price, it goes back there, and they can tell more than anybody else what prices are affecting what in which regions, and that gives them the ultimate price flexibility. If they didn't think the testing prices were important, they wouldn't do it. But they know that it is so critically important. And you know what? I heard that a third of the time they raise the price. Two-thirds of the time it's too high. When they change it, they lower it and they do some special. But a third of the time they actually raise the price because it is too low and it does not have that perceived value.
Some of our customers that listen to this tape are going to make a lot of money just by raising their price because of what we've just said. But let's move on real quickly to the next marketing mistake. The next one is relying on networking or some other inconsistent, unpredictable method to generate your leads. There's nothing wrong with networking. There's nothing wrong with some of these other methods of generating leads. But the problem with them for the small entrepreneur is, let's take networking as an example. you have to physically go out with your time and do the networking. So what happens is you go out, you do some networking, and you generate some leads. Then you call on those leads and you make some sales. Now you have to fulfill the product. The problem is while you're fulfilling the product, especially in service businesses, you don't have time to be doing networking. So then all of a sudden what happens is you spend 2 weeks or a month providing the services to the people that you sold, and all of a sudden, guess what?
You're out of business.
You're out of business because you don't have any leads. You have to generate a way to consistently and predictably generate a flow of leads so that you always know you're going to have money in your bank account, and you always know where your next customer and where your next prospect is coming from. And that's one of the really beautiful things about online marketing.
No, without a doubt, the online world is a beautiful place to generate leads. Constantly, consistently, predictably. So are display ads in magazines. Once you have an ad that works, I like to test everything online first to make sure that it works. Once I have an ad that works, I like to go with display ads in magazines, occasionally even classified ads, publicity. But the point is, if you're not using direct response marketing, you're always depending on your ability to network, to go to the latest Chamber of Commerce meeting, to go to the latest young entrepreneur club or whatever. And that's a great way to meet, I think the best way to meet local vendors and people you want to do business with on a local basis. But it is not a reliable way to consistently and predictably generate a flow of new customers.
Well, networking, the best thing about networking online is it's not having to be in a place. You can do a lot of this automated through autoresponders, email on demand. You can do it through email. And one of the funny things is in my local market, when I tested networking, quote unquote, most of the people I met there were simply meeting there for the same purpose I was, but we were generating very few leads for each other, so I didn't go anymore.
Well, right, and also networking, unless you live in San Francisco, L.A., or New York, is almost irrelevant to do on a one-on-one basis because you don't, first of all, you do not necessarily want to do business with people locally. I do very little business in Boulder, very little business in the state of Colorado. Most of my clients are in California, Texas, Florida, and New York. And I've just found that by going to a local lead generating source and networking, a chamber meeting or whatever, some of the special meetings or community college types of things, is neat to meet, like I said, vendors, but to actually meet clients, that's not where my target market is. My target market is in California, and it's in New York City, and it's in Dallas, Texas, and it's in Miami, Florida.
Next marketing mistake is not developing or building your credibility and your believability. Because what happens is, especially if you're in a service business or you're a consultant, people are skeptical and they don't believe and they don't trust. But the same thing applies to selling different products. And you have to have some way to convince people that you're reliable, dependable, trustworthy, and especially if you're in some type sort of consulting business, that you are credible. There's several ways that you can create credibility. One of them, information products can be real helpful. Writing articles in your industry, if you're in the consulting, can help create credibility. There's also the matter of believability in terms of the benefits that you're offering customers. And so there's different ways you create believability. For example, testimonials are a major way that you create believability and credibility for the benefits that you're promising people. So you want to look at what are the promises that you're making, what are the results that you're talking to people about, and then ask yourself, do I prove that I deliver those? Or how can I prove and demonstrate to people beyond a shadow of a doubt that I can deliver what I say I can deliver?
I'll give you two very simple, easy ways to build credibility. If you are not using these two things, at the very least, these are more basic than any testimonials, more basic than anything. Number one, have a physical street address as your address. Do not use a post office box. Number two, have a telephone number in your advertising, your lead generating stuff, your website, and make sure that you have a live answer operator. There are people who successfully use voicemail systems, and maybe they work, maybe they don't. I just don't feel comfortable with them. I have a live answer operator 24 hours a day. It costs me about $100 a month to have that. But what that means is that when someone calls my business at 4 in the morning, and if they call from another country, then it might be 9 in the morning for them, but it's 4 in the morning for me. They hear Cyberwave Media, can I help you? And when they ask for Jonathan Mizell, this is Mr. Mizell is out of the office until so-and-so. It sounds so professional, and I'm sure that it's increased my income just by appearing credible.
Well, the look of your marketing materials all and your image and what your business cards or letterheads look like and your sales letters, if you send them out, all those things are important. I had a friend of mine who was talking about some of the low results, some problems that had with their direct mail recently, and I looked at one of the direct mail packages, and it was photocopied, and which nothing wrong with photocopying, but the quality was bad. I mean, it was splotchy, and it looked horrible.
I'm sorry, I didn't even have a chance to mention that. You're absolutely right. Don't you hate it when you see really great ad copy and it's on an uneven fourth generation photocopy that looks like garbage?
And the outside of the envelope for the return address is stamped and it's crooked. It's one of those rubber stamps. It's absurd. Or they take those little mailing label things and they stick them on there and they're crooked and they just look like junk. And Declan, the same principle would apply to websites, because if people have a junky, unprofessional, obviously, not well put together website, it doesn't create any kind of credibility for the business.
No, but those are the free and the cheapo do-it-yourself sites, and there's nothing wrong about trying to do it yourself. But when you have somebody coming in, if you put up garbage, there's an old rule of audio recording that really applies. Garbage in, garbage out. If you show them garbage, they're just going to look at it that way. But there's one thing I wanted to add to this, too. Believability and credibility, these are very, very important. But don't forget the fact that you shouldn't try to be perfect. One thing I had, a recent experience, I had a package ready to go, but somebody was delayed in shipping the videotape to me, so I was going to be 2 to 3 weeks late, and I promised 72 hours delivery. So I didn't try to pretend or con the people. I sent them something. In fact, I sent them part of the package and said, listen, I'm under the gun. Some things are being delayed, but we're going to get it to you. Being a human being and being able to show a few flaws, they're willing to listen as long as you talk to them. But if you try to fake it, you're dead.
When you approach a customer with a direct marketing piece and you hit their hot buttons and they decide that you're someone that they feel somewhat comfortable with based on your message, the first thing after they've decided that they're going to buy from you is they're looking for reasons not to buy from you. Once they've decided that they're going to buy, you have a wonderful opportunity to talk them out of giving you their money by using a crooked stamp on the return address, or a lousy indicia instead of a live stamp, or putting a big fat mailing label, or using fourth generation photocopies, or making them send a postal money order to a P.O. box, or using a horrible answering machine, or not worse, not even having a phone number on there.
Well, and it kind of, another marketing mistake related to that and what you said just a little bit earlier, Jonathan, is just making it hard or virtually impossible for people to give you money. What you want to do is you want to make it easy for people to spend money with you, easy to buy from you. Did you ever go to a retail store, a department store, to buy something, and you felt like taking that big thing of clothes or something that you had to purchase and just acting like you were going to walk out with it just so you could find someone to ring up your order? Or did you ever want to subscribe to a newsletter like I have, and you had to call 5 times to actually get a subscription to a newsletter? Or, John, I think you mentioned that you had called someone the other day.
By the way, if you call any Marlon, Declan, or any of our order lines, we will gladly take your money on the first shot. We work very hard to make sure that there is someone ready and able to accept payment for any of our products.
You've got to at least have someone intelligent enough to take down a credit card number and say, okay, we'll get it out to you. But you, Jonathan tried to order this product the other day. He got put on hold for something like 5 minutes.
And Six minutes.
And how long did it take before you were actually able to order the product?
The person was totally unaware of what I was ordering. I even gave them instructions. I said, just take my credit card number, tell the person that this is the product I want, and have them ship it to me. And the woman then proceeded to put me on hold for 6 minutes. It took over 10 minutes to complete the order. The worst thing was not that it took over 10 minutes of my time, but that the person who was selling the product had to pay over $10 in charges at 85 cents a minute on a per call basis to offend me. Now, I wasn't offended because this person I know, and you know, and I cut people a lot of slack, and I'm just, you know, as someone who I understand knew the products were good. But imagine a customer who, after you've been through so much work and trouble to get them to pull the credit card out, now can't even give it to a person.
Or how about this one? Well, if you pay with it, we can take your check, sir, but we can't take it over the phone, so why don't you just go to send it in to us, and then we'll hold it 30 days until it clears, and then we'll get your product out to you.
You know, if you don't take credit cards, that's fine, but you should take credit cards.
Well, absolutely.
If you don't accept credit cards, the only few ways I know around it are, one is ship the product out. Make sure you have dealing with a good market. Ship the product out without, and first of all, apply for Visa MasterCard processing and try to get that. But in the meantime, ship your product out with an invoice, or accept checks that are post-dated or some other.
Well,
some
there's other also the thing, the check by phone thing, where they, because everybody doesn't have a credit card. I think that you should take checks by phone, or people can fax in the checks. I mean, there's different ways of taking people's money. I think you, if you're in the direct response business and you're selling anything over, you know, $20 or $30, you just about have to use plastic. I understand that some of the low-price products, a lot of times you can get by with just taking checks. But I think if you're selling anything at a significant price, you've got to take plastic. But in addition to that, hey, not everybody in the world has a credit card. I think you need to be able to take their money any way they want to give it to you.
So you're telling us that we should make it easy for people to pay us, huh?
Right.
How many people, I run into people opening their business and they tell me about the credit cards. They say, you know, when I make some money, I'll justify spending, that it's usually about $35 a month or so, just a maintenance fee of having that account. And they say, once I make the money, I'll do it. And they don't think, what legitimate business offering now doesn't take all these different forms to make it easy to buy?
You should accept every major credit card, at least Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover. You should also accept checks by phone and fax. If you order from me, you can order via email. You can order via my secure website. You can mail to me. You can fax to me. You can call my 24-hour-day 800 number. You can call my office. You can drop by my office. Literally, I will accept people's money any conceivable way that they want to pay. I even do barter sometimes. If people have a product that I want or a service that I want, I'll gladly trade them.
Next marketing mistake, no unique selling proposition. We've discussed this in other products, so we won't belabor the point here, but you've got to have something that differentiates your product and explains why people, what the benefits and advantages they'll get by giving you their money instead of someone else. You have to differentiate yourself. You just can't say, oh, well, buy from me because I'm a nice person.
You have to have something unique. If you cannot identify a reason, a unique reason for someone to do business with you,
then why are you in business?
You just don't even deserve to be in business. Get out of business and go do something else, or call it a hobby, but you need to be very clear about why you are better than your competition, or what you offer that's different. In some cases, all you have to do, just a minuscule amount of customer service can sometimes be the thing that differentiates you. I talked to a guy recently who was an insurance broker, and I said, well, what's your USP? He says, well, I answer my phone. Which is hilarious. He says, I answer my phone and I return my phone calls. He says, how's that for unique? I said, you know what? In the insurance industry, that is a unique selling proposition. Sometimes it can be something simple. It usually is, but the one clear thing is, and you taught me this, Marlon, it has to be something that's different, something that is unique to your business.
Some advantages you give that other people don't. Did you have anything to say on that, Declan?
Well, basically, I think that most people don't want, they try not to be unique. And by looking at, they think that they're going to be like everybody else. I had one person who said their unique sales proposition was not being competitive with their competition. And I said, what does that mean? If you don't know, they won't know.
The final marketing mistake, we'll close with this, just not being willing to screw up enough. You know, we've talked about all these mistakes, and hey, you got to be willing to make every one of them, because that's how we know about these mistakes, is we've probably made it one time or the other, every one of them. Hey, don't be afraid of making mistakes. It's okay if you make mistakes, but be aware of it, know what you're doing, and don't make them again.
It takes me about 10 failures to equal one success, so whenever I have a success, I try to get through those failures as quickly as possible to get on to the next success. Don't be afraid of failure.
If you don't make mistakes, if you don't think you're making a mistake because you're lying to yourself. I mean, in baseball, you go 1-for-3, you hit .333, you're a superstar. 1-for-3 means the other two times you don't hit, don't worry about
it. In baseball, if you screw up 70% of the time, you are an excellent hitter. In marketing, if you screw up 95% of the time, you're an excellent marketer. The biggest piece of advice, don't be afraid to get off your butt and do it.
I know companies that only succeed with 1 out of 7 products they market, or 1 out of every 10 products that they test market, and they still make unbelievable amounts of money. We're going to close now. My name's Marlon Sanders, and this is
Declan Dunn.
And I am Jonathan Mizell.
You've been listening to How to Avoid the Most Common Marketing Mistakes. Thanks for listening, and best of success.